So you could call this Lag Ba'omer. It's definitely not Hilchot Lag Ba'omer. Maybe you could entitle it Why We Shouldn't Be Mevatel Zman with Midurot on Lag Ba'omer. Okay? What's the makor of Lag Ba'omer, the day being special? So I'm going to put before you six theories. The simple fact that there are six theories also says something. Alright? The first and most common theory is that the Hilula of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Hilula means a celebration. Sometimes in Shas it's meant a celebration of a wedding. It's a celebration of some sort. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai lived in the 2nd century, you could say about 1,800 years ago. His Rebbe was Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was one of the five Talmidim that Rabbi Akiva taught after the 24,000 died. The Gemara in Yevamos, Samach Beth, said, I quoted 2 weeks ago, one of the reasons for Minega Avelu during Svira was the fact that the Talmidim Rabbi Akiva died, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was one of the five great Talmidim that he taught afterwards. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was known to be a freedom fighter, a person who stood up for Jewish freedom. Very much like Rabbi Akiva, his Rabbi in a way, because as you know, Rabbi Akiva was a supporter of Bar Kokhba. In any case, there's an Agarata mentioned in Shabbos, Daf Lamed Gimel, and it goes something like this. Potach Rabbi Yehuda, and I think it's Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chalafta that the Gemara is referring to. Potach Rabbi Yehuda Bar Omar, okay, and we're talking about Tanaim. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, right? It's about Tanaim. Potach Rabbi Yehuda Bar Omar, Kama Na'im Ma'asim Shel Umazu. How pleasant are the actions of this nation? He's referring to the Romans. Tiknu Shvakim, they established marketplaces. Tiknu Gesharim, they built bridges. Tiknu Merchatzot, they built bathhouses. Okay, these were really the hallmarks of Rome, in many ways, if you think about it. In other words, the marketplace, the bridges representing the Roman roads that interconnected different cities, and their system of bathhouses, of public bathhouses, bringing a certain level of cleanliness, aestheticism to the population. Okay, Rabbi Yossi Shatak. So Rabbi Yossi was sitting there, and Rabbi Yossi was quiet. Ne'ene Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai answered, Va'amar, Kol ma shetiknu lo tuknu elo letzorach atzman. Anything that they made, they established the Romans, they did it for selfish reasons for themselves. Tiknu shvakim, they made marketplaces, la'asim behem zonot, to put prostitutes in. Okay, and we know this is a historic fact, that in the marketplace there was a specific stall that was reserved for the prostitutes. Merchatzaot la'dan behem et atzman. Right, it's in order to pamper themselves. Gisharim and bridges, litom mehem meches, simply to get taxes, to take tolls from the population. Anyway, that was the conversation. Basically, he was criticizing the Romans. Halach Yehuda ben Gerim, so Yehuda ben Gerim went for siper divrehem, and he started to tell about this conversation. V'nishmu l'malchut, eventually the Romans heard it, the government heard it. Amru, so the government said, Yehuda she'ila yita'aleh. Yehuda that praised us, he will be raised, okay, promoted. Yossi she'shatak, Yossi that was quiet, yigalel tzipori. He'll be sent into galut and tzipori. And as you know, Yossi was one of the starters of the great population of Tanaim that later lived in tzipori. Shimon shegina. That Shimon that said derogatory comments, Yehareg, he had a death sentence. So somehow he heard about the death sentence, and he ran away with his son, okay, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, to the famous cave in Pikin, and in the cave, or right outside the cave, grew a boxer tree, a charuv tree, carob tree, and a stream went through the cave. Anyway, one of the miracles is that they realized that they had to lay low for 12 years, and somehow they subsisted on only eating carobs and water, and that was what they lived on. Furthermore, they came to a realization they're going to be there for a long time and their clothes are going to wear out, so they removed their clothes, and in order to be able to learn Torah without clothes, they buried themselves up to their neck in dirt, and that's how they would learn all day long, thus preserving their clothes. After about 12 years, they exited the cave, and there the Gadata says that when the first thing they saw when they exited the cave was a farmer plowing his field. And you have to understand that during those 12 years in the cave, okay, according to our Masorah, that's where they discovered the Zohar. Authored the Zohar, discovered the Zohar. So they were like on the super duper high Madrega. Okay, there was absolutely no Gashmias whatsoever. They had no clothes, and they clearly had no diet of normal food to eat. In other words, they just ate carobs. So when they got out of the cave, they saw this farmer farming, and they said, how could this person turn his back on Chaya Olam Haba and be Osek in Olam Hazeh, in Gashmias? So, and Rav Shimon ben Chai stared at this farmer, and the Medrash says that he turned him into a pile of bones. Okay, it's kind of like X-ray vision just killed him. A Bat Kol comes out and says, what, you know, you come out of the cave to destroy my world, go back into the cave. So they go back into the cave for another year, and then they come out of the cave, and they see a person holding two branches of Adasim, and they ask him what's the deal, and the guy says, one is for, it's for Shabbat, one is for Zachor, and one is for Shamor. Which is, okay, symbolic of the fact, I guess it was also something that grew, symbolic of the fact that people were on a high spiritual level, and into mysticism on some level, meaning the fact that you have two branches, one for Zachor and one for Shamor, is in itself, you know, is mystical. In any case, so they were able to come out. Someone explained that Medrash, the fact that the Bat Kol told them to go back in, that was a message to them that you can't really exist in this world if you completely divorce yourself from the physical. You have to find some kind of a synthesis. But in any case, that's the story. Now, what did it have to do with Lag BaOmer? So somehow there's a tradition that his Yurtzeit, when Rav Shimon ben Yochai went up, type some kind of a fiery flash to Shemayim, it was on Lag BaOmer. Now, what's the makor for that? There's no clear makor. Around the 1300s, there was a geographer, an Arabic geographer by the name of Al-Damaski, that wrote a description of that area, how people had a hirul or a chagigah, but didn't say a specific date. In around 1500s, some pilgrims or tourists mentioned the fact that there was a hilula on Tedvav Iyar, which is the night of Pesach Sheni, not the night of Lag BaOmer. Okay, and now you're talking about now the 1500s. So this, other than that, and until then, there's mamish no makor whatsoever of some kind of a celebration on Lag BaOmer. As a matter of fact, even the Mekubalim in Tzfat, I'm talking about the Arizal in his time, where Yosef was in Tzfat, there's no mention of a Hilula, of a celebration on Lag BaOmer. The only mention we have is the fact that Rabbi Kiva's Talmidim stopped dying on Lag BaOmer. Okay, but nonetheless, Ad HaYom HaZeh, I think the most common understanding is that this is the Yurtzeit of Rashbi, and therefore that's the Hilula of Rashbi. So it's that this minhag is only a couple hundred years old. It doesn't date all the way back. Okay. Again, the Shulchan Aruch who lived in Tzfat at that time, the Ramah mentions Lag BaOmer, and they don't mention anything about a Hilula. If anything, the Ramah actually says that the Minhag Avelut stops in Lag BaOmer, but you have to wait until the morning to take a haircut because you have to mix it Yom Kekula. So if anything, that shows that no one was dancing and celebrating at the night of Lag BaOmer. Yes?
Do we have any other minhagim of celebrating someone's yahrzeit?
Celebrating yahrzeit? Mekubalim do it. Hasidim do it. They celebrate. They make a celebration on a day because, you know, it's a day that their particular Rebbe or whatever went up to Shemayim, went up to a high Madrega. Yeah.
So we said that the Ramah that applies to all the Hagia Bela, it's not only for Chazor, or just
look,
for,
you know, halachically, why are you allowed to sing around the campfire with a guitar and things like that? The only thing I can tell you is that this is a minhag and this is a minhag, so they're both minhagim. You know. Now, the second theory has nothing to do with Shimon bar Yochai, but has to do with the fact that Rabbi Kiva's Talmidim stopped dying on that date. As I mentioned to you in the Gemara in Yevamos, there's another Girsa'ad, Prosa'atzeret, which 2 weeks before Shavuot falls out exactly on Lag BaOmer. The Sefer HaManhig, which Rabbi Ibn Yarchi Miluniel, about 800 years ago, wrote Shamati Rabbi Yerachya Halevi, which was 50 years earlier than him, She Matza B'Sefer Yashan She Yatza Misfarad, that Prosat Seret is 2 weeks before Shavuot, and that's when they stopped dying. Okay, and that would be an explanation for Lag BaOmer. A third theory the Maharil mentions is similar in that the Minhag Avelut is only 32 days. And they only died during the on days that you normally would say Tachnun. And so it wasn't like they died until Lag BaOmer, but they died the entire time till Shavuot, but only on days that you would say Lag BaOmer, in commemoration that comes out to 32, so we do it till Lag BaOmer. And that's what the deal of Lag BaOmer. Yes?
Theory number two. Surely they only stopped dying because they all died. So what was that?
They stopped dying because they all died. I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. I hear.
No, those were new ones.
The death still stopped. I hear your point. Okay. A fourth theory that's brought down by the Chatam Sofer. Yes. I'll get to it. The fourth theory is the Chatam Sofer, and he brings down a Yesh Omrim that it's the day that man started to fall in the Midbar. Okay?
What's the relation to Shavuos?
Huh?
What's the relation to Shavuos?
No relation to Shavuos at all. It's just actually the day that man started to fall in the Midbar.
Why is that significant in any...
Oh, why it's significant?
Yeah.
I can just tell you this, that Mekubalim are sometimes referred to as Ochlei Man. Man eaters. There's some kind of a mystic significance to man. So they saw something more to man than meets the eye. Anyways, fifth theory is actually the day that Rav Shimon bar Yochai and his son left the cave. And that's the Hilula.
First time it's the same.
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. Maybe it was the same day. Okay. The next theory, the last theory, the sixth theory, is that it was Yom Cherut Yerushalayim for Bar Kokhba. Bar Kokhba took control of Yerushalayim for a very short time, and they celebrated Yom Yerushalayim then. And that's the significance of Lag BaOmer. Okay? Josephus actually says, points out that Lag BaOmer was the start of the Bar Kokhba revolt. So, you know, there are all kinds of theories that go around what was so special about this day. And that's it. I have no other, you know, we'll talk a little bit of the minhagim of Lag BaOmer that we do have. One minhag is Aliyah LeRegel to the kever of Rav Shimon bar Yochai, and that would only work, of course, if you believed it was his yahrzeit. It's an incredible scene in Israel. I mean, there are all kinds of people go there. Thousands of people go there, from Edot Mizrach to all kinds of different Chassidut, to all kinds of other people that just go to see. and there's a women's section and a men's section and a mixed section, and there are all kinds of people that sell holy water and magic water and stuff like that. And there are people that, that you know, dance and go wild and burn oil, everything that, that, that comes to their hands. And there are other people that just say and say Tehillim with a lot of kavana the entire time. Okay? Another minhag is bows and arrows and bonfires. Okay? I don't know if you are Noheg in Chutzlaritz to shoot bow and arrow on Lag BaOmer. No, nobody.
We
don't really have those.
Huh?
We don't really have those.
Yeah.
Okay.
Apple baseball.
There's a Lag BaOmer Audi. There's a Lag BaOmer Audi. Anyway, so what's Makor? The fact that when the Romans persecuted the Jews and didn't allow them to learn Torah, so there are stories brought down in the Gemara that Rabbi Kiva or Rabbanim of the like would take children into the forest with bows and arrows, and the Romans would ask them, "Hey, where are you going?" They would say, "Well, we're practicing our sport." The Romans would say, "Sport, that's a good thing. You're finally learning." And they would go out into the forest and they would secretly learn Torah. Okay, and that's where the bows and arrows come from, and maybe the bonfires as well. Another bonfire theory could be that Rav Shimon Yochai went up the Shemaim in like a burst of flame. Another idea, it could be symbolic of the Torah or the Zohar. Another theory might be that it has to do with Bar Kokhba. What would it have to do with Bar Kokhba? Because Bar Kokhba basically had to do with autonomy or independence for the Jewish people from the Romans. And if you remember one of the early shiurim I gave about bonfires, the bonfires were used as a signal of Kiddush HaChodesh. And it would also symbolize the fact that the centrality of the Beit HaMikdash and how the Kohanim, you know, or the Sanhedrin rather, were Koveya Rosh Chodesh, and that would show a independent authority of the government. So it could be those bonfires are reminiscent to the bonfires of the Masin Musu'ot. Yes? No, his neshama went up in flames. His neshama was like a flame going up the Shemayim.
Small.
Didn't consume his body. Okay? Yes? What means so many different minhagim?
Well, like, right, it doesn't seem like you're really quite sure about. Like, we don't have one set of minhagim.
No, you know, you don't. What you're saying is no one's quite sure why we're doing it on Lag BaOmer.
Yes.
That's what you're saying. Yes, I mentioned that at the beginning of this year. I think it shows that no one knows.
So mystical.
May I be right?
It's mysterious. No, I mean, I'm trying to point out to you that, you know, Ramon and all these achronim. As you open up, it's not just the Ramah, you know, you open up all the achronim on that, none of them had this minhag of Lag BaOmer. The only time you start to hear it mentioned in halacha is when people like 200 years ago started to burn chairs and clothing, and there was a whole, you know, shayla halacha, whether it's Baal Tashkut or not. But it's just not mentioned. It's something that somehow formed much, much later. Any case, another theory is that it's focused on Bar Kokhba, as I mentioned, and that the 12,000 Zugot Talmidim, the 12,000 pairs or Chavrutot of Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, are actually not Talmidim, but followers of Rabbi Akiva. They were followers. They were political, religious political followers of Rabbi Akiva, and therefore they were fighters of Bar Kokhba. And the 24,000 people were killed were actually the 24,000 Bar Kokhba fighters that were killed by the Romans. Haruge Beitar and etc. Now, this is interesting. You know, number one, as we know, in the Rambam Hilchos Malachim, Yud Aleph describes that the Mashiach is going to be Basar V'dam, a regular human being with no superpowers. I mean, he'll have special powers, but not superpowers. And he'll be a regular human being. Haraya, the Rambam says, that Rabbi Kiva fully believed that Bar Kokhba was the Mashiach, and he announced the whole world that he is Mashiach, and then later Rabbi Kiva saw that Bar Kokhba, you know, went wrong, that he made a mistake. So you can understand what we're talking about. Like a Geula, they really saw Bar Kokhba as the Mashiach. Okay, the Gemara in Barachas Samach Bet mentions the fact that Rabbi Akiva ran away from a boleshet, and a boleshet means like a special agents that were sent by the Romans after him. So it describes the fact that he also was like a political activist that was wanted by the Romans. The Igeret of Shur Yagon writes that the Talmidim Rabbi Akiva died because they have a Shamda al Talmidim Rabbi Akiva. Shamda means a gezeira from the government. It doesn't mean that they died from some kind of a plague, but rather they died by being killed. So there are sources that these Talmidim Rabbi Akiva were actually fighters for Rabbi Akiva. Questions? Yes.
If they were in fact critical followers, why is it 12,000 Zulus as opposed to 24,000? It's an odd way to describe them.
So you're saying it's a mashmah that they were chavrusas?
Yeah, I guess. And also, what was the whole thing going around the covers there? Is that they were just political for fighting soldiers?
Maybe there was political, infighting. Maybe that's why they died. You don't like it?
Slightly contrived.
No, it's contrived. There's a theory that I saw that someone had. No Posek said this, because as I tell you, Poskim really don't talk about this whole thing. Yeah?
Does the number 24,000 even make sense for Talmidim at that time? Would there be such a number of people dedicated to Torah study then?
Maybe if they didn't charge tuition. Maybe there were a lot. I don't know. You don't think 24,000 doesn't make any sense?
Was the population large? I don't know, the number just seems very high for a population of Barfaspa that wasn't very large.
I don't know. Yeah.
Isn't 24,000 a quite small amount of people fighting the entire Roman? The question from the other side. It's too many people. We need a super little fight.
I don't know the numbers. I really don't know the numbers. You can read Josephus or read his history books to try to figure out what the numbers were. Don't know. Anyway, that's all, folks. Oh, I forgot. Last year, I forgot to mention that Yom HaTzmut is a gematria of Bittul Torah.
Yes, just to show that it's perfect for Bittul Torah.
But my bomb is not a gematria of Bittul Torah.